Good afternoon, everyone. It is the second of three talks on 2012, that great buzzword of the age. And this second talk is concerning unity, free will, love, and light, and how they impact us at this very critical time running up to 2012. Welcome to the homecoming audience, and welcome to BBS. My name is Carla Ruckert, and I sing as well as talk, so don't be surprised. I had a little nut tree, nothing would it bear, except a silver nutmeg and a golden pear. The king of Spain's daughter came to visit me, and all for the sake of my little nut tree. I dance over water, I skip over sea, and all the birds in the air couldn't catch me. We've talked a little about unity, about the fact that all of the universe is one thing, which is why we are everything, every emotion, every feeling. Both the ones that we both most appreciate and admire, and the ones we would most prefer not to deal with at all. However, in this regard, I always think of Ho'oponopono, which is a Hawaiian healing technique. It involves the person understanding the illness of a subject or a patient, finding that within himself, whatever the damage is, and then healing himself. In one famous experiment, a doctor did this in a prison hospital for the insane. He never saw any of the patients. He simply took their charts into the office with him, and one by one, he sat in his chair and entered into what he read in the chart. And to a man, he was able to heal the suffering, to bring people who were raving into a lucid state, and to enable people that had been lost in the system for years to have a fresh start. You have to believe in yourself and love yourself in order to be able to enter into the disastrously toxic states of a criminally insane person. So I admire this gentleman all the more. Free will is what the Creator exercised in its desire to know itself. That's why I sang about dancing over water and skipping over sea. It's the way I see free will working with us. In a way, the Holy Spirit and its images of fire and the dove and the burning bush enter into that image of the Creator knowing itself. This is me. What do you see? On February 21st, 1981, Don asked those of Ra, I understand that the first distortion of intelligent infinity is a distortion of what we call free will. Can you give me a definition of this distortion? And Ra said, very simply, in this distortion of the Law of One, it is recognized that the Creator will know itself. So creation is the field the Creator made within which to know itself. Now, it's important to realize, I think, that manifestation, as we understand it with our physical eyes, is not inherent in unity, which is not, this is the only thing not a distortion, not inherent in the first distortion, free will, not inherent in love or the logos. It doesn't come into being until the third distortion, light or manifestation. So back to free will. What an incredible thing to know that we are all part of the Creator. We've all been sent out to gather intelligence, to see what we feel, to choose what to desire, to gather experiences, and then to offer the whole incarnation back to the Creator as His food, or as Ra would say, its food. Hatton said on April 22, 1984, "If you look about you during your daily activities and see any part of the creation, experience any part of the creation, embrace any part of the creation, and feel for that seemingly separate part the feeling of love, you have made the grade. What, my friends, is this feeling of love? What is it that you experience when you feel this? It may seem a bit different for each of you, and yet it is one thing, and ultimately is only one feeling, one experience, one knowledge. It is a feeling of total unity, total compassion, total oneness with the seeming other self, the seeming other entity, whether that entity be an insect, a rodent, an owl, or an individual, whether it be the most ugly, unacceptable entity that you have ever experienced, or the most beautiful and attractive. If that same total feeling of unity and love fills your being on contacting either end of the spectrum of what you might call desirable, then, my friends, you have found the Creator's love." Hatton goes on to say, "This is the message that we bring to you. It is not complex. It is not intellectual. It is a feeling, a knowing, an all-embracing experience. It is a total unity with everything that there is. It expands your consciousness from the seeming isolation of your being to total acceptance and merging with all other consciousnesses and all other beings." I have been fortunate enough in my life to have been gifted with the ability to slip into states that are not normal. The longest that such a state ever lasted was about 3 days. The shortest is about 15 seconds. Sometimes I move into the light, and I'm the light. Sometimes I move into a place where I witness the light. Both of those let you feel and see with absolute surety that this is a perfect universe. And I believe that my understanding that is collected at moments like this are very valuable, to me at least, in that against all reason, against all the obvious problems that any one person may have, there is that overriding evidence that is firsthand to me that says all is well and all is well and all will be well. The creation falls naturally into densities of light, or, if you like, densities of information. Now, actually, where did I get this? Out of my head. I just realized one day that when we were talking about densities, we weren't talking about some arcane concept of density. I talked with a physicist years ago, 2003, and he said, when I asked him about what makes one density different, he said, well, it's like comparing apples and oranges. The light that comes into third density isn't like the light that comes into fourth density. So I thought, well, then what changes? And I realized suddenly, oh, it's the fullness of the sunshine. So the first density is the foundation density. And I like what Don asked the Ra group, could you tell me about this first density of planetary entities? Ra said, each step recapitulates intelligent infinity in its discovery of awareness. In a planetary environment, all begins in what you would call chaos, energy undirected and random in its infinity. Slowly, in your terms of understanding, there forms a focus of self-awareness. Thus the Logos moves. Light comes to form the darkness, according to the co-creator's patterns and vibratory rhythms, so constructing a certain type of experience. This begins with first density, which is the density of consciousness, the mineral and water life upon the planet, learning from fire and wind, the awareness of being. This is the first density. So the powers then are earth or minerals, fire, wind, and water. The Indians name these the powers and also name the four directions as their way of explaining how the earth came to be. And they always honor the powers and the directions. Our American Native friends have a great deal in common with the Law of One, and it is said they had ample visitation back in the days of cave paintings. Some of George Hunt Williamson's research is especially persuasive in this regard. It must have been something to graduate into second density from being a rock to being something that could move. Power of locomotion. The leaves still turn to the light, the flowers to the sun. Even the grass turns where the light goes. And when our lilies come out, we can see how they get their light by which way they bend. The ones in the rock garden in front that I call Wuthering Heights, with the rocks going up to the top, and wildflowers and herbs and Jack in the Pulpits on the ground in between each of the four sides. The lilies that grow there grow about at a 45 degree angle. They're not up like this. They're going for the light. So that is the second density. It involves not only plants but also animals, and they are aware. They're just not self-aware. At the end of the second density, we have the culmination of that density's creatures, the intelligent and very human-like great apes. Desmond Morris wrote a brilliant book years and years ago in which he described how we still act like great apes and not to our benefit. What he pointed out more than anything else is that the great ape believes in protecting its clan, gathering food and other things that it needs for its clan, and defending the clan and its natural resources against others who might want to take it away. When you look at what we do as the American Empire, that's precisely what we're doing. We are securing the entire world as a way of making sure that we will have all of the natural resources of this planet. I read a very interesting article by Chalmers Johnson on the American Empire. It's called The Sorrows of Empire, and he actually turned this into a book, or he wrote an article to publicize the book, I'm not sure. But here are some things that he said about the American Empire. He said that we don't govern colonies anymore. We just build bases. There are over 700 bases worldwide, not counting the United States. I hoped to find the amount of acreage that took up, and he covered that. He said that he tried to find that out, but they go to all kinds of lengths to hide that information. I think it would be startling for us to know just how large the military enclaves are worldwide. Indeed, the largest bases have internal bus systems to help people get around within the base. The largest one, which is south of Baghdad, has 9 bus systems. We have 13 navies not just ships. We're talking about naval units. We have 6,000 American bases, and there are probably more, but again, there's a lot of fudging in the statistics. People write whatever they can find in order to hide just precisely how much of the United States is taken up by military people. Then, of course, there are the interstate highways. Those were prompted by the Defense Department, not anything to do with the infrastructure of the United States. They simply felt that it would be good to have an easily secured nationwide system of highways that the Army could close to civilian traffic in the case of an emergency. The most scary statistic in that article to me was this one. In 2003, there were 14,000 sexual assaults. The Army being now co-ed, I suppose this is almost inevitable among a bunch of very young, very immature people. The women are not protected. And this is the kicker. No abortions are allowed on base at all. An Army woman who becomes pregnant and does not want the child cannot find an abortion that is safe. She has to go into the town in which her unit is and find, hopefully, a competent doctor or nurse or midwife with a knitting needle if she wants not to have the baby. It seems unrealistic to me to allow women to serve in the Army but not to protect them, either by keeping them from being assaulted or by protecting their dignity when they have become pregnant with an unwanted baby. And any country in the world that we feel is harboring terrorists, any country in the world, is our just target. Quote from Rumsfeld. Although I do not think Obama seconds the emotions involved here. I think he stuck with it. If you all saw his speech on television or listened to it on the radio the other day, he was forced into the position of allowing all the things that he had preached against when he was running for president and saying that everybody knew that he disagreed with Bush, but after all, he was a patriot and he had done a good job. I'll bet that was hard for him to say with a straight face. But he was stuck with it because he had to say thank you to the troops that were coming home and not be in the position that the Vietnam War put its vets when they came home to jeers and spitting and almost crucifixion. I was in the Vietnam era. My youth was in the 60s. I graduated college in 1966. And I remember being so upset that all of my friends were having to go off to war. The draft was still in effect then. That I looked into joining one of the, I think I talked to the Air Force. I didn't want to kill people. I thought maybe I could train to do something helpful. She said she would have welcomed me with open arms, but I got an attack of sanity and dropped the idea. But here we are in the density of choice, and we are at the end of a long line of empires. We're not the first. And if what Kuo called the space pirates had their way, we wouldn't be the last. What they had in mind was for us to just keep fighting forever and keep learning how better to heal ourselves so that they could patch up the soldiers and then send them right back to fight some more. Meanwhile, feasting off of the terror, the anger, the hostility, and all of those dark emotions. I'm embarrassed for us. We haven't progressed as a nation state beyond Babylon. We're still protecting our clan, defending our clan, and protecting our natural resources. The arc of instability that the Bush presidency drew goes through South America, North Africa, all of what we would call the third world, and ends up in China. And it neatly covers every country that has significant natural resources that we might want. You might as well call it the Ark of Natural Resources. What we need to do for ourselves is to realize the service-to-self aspect of war. It's hard because we're used to empires. Those of us that were originally Martians lost our planet to habitation in what we felt was a just war. So did Deneb, so did Atlantis, so did Babylon, the Roman Empire, the Empire of the Khans, the Holy Roman Empire, which went through two Reichs, then the Third Reich, German Empire, and then I'd say we could easily call ourselves in Britain the Fourth Reich, or the American-British Empire. It was British first. The British Empire was the empire upon whom the sun never sets. And that's only funny if you like tennis. And then, of course, America took over and became the top dog. And now we have carved out not part of the world, but the whole world for our oyster. And apparently we need everything that the world has in order to keep on with our lifestyle for another 20 years, 30 years, 50 years, not long. On March 15, 2008, Kuo said, "Each of you is, spiritually speaking, an infant, and you are crying in the night. You are crying for spiritual food. You are crying to be cleansed of the grime of confusion, sorrow, and suffering. And you are crying because you are alone and you do not feel loved. As entities move through the third density, they begin to be able to address their own needs. As they awaken and become spiritual toddlers or spiritual preschoolers, they begin to choose to feed themselves heavenly food, to cleanse themselves from spiritually degrading ideas and concepts, and to win through to the knowledge that they are not alone. Because of the intense confusion among your peoples throughout your third density experience, for the most part, entities have not matured beyond the crib. They cry out in the darkness, and our hearts go out to them. There is a great desire on our parts to reach out the hand, to steady that baby, to feed that baby, to give that sweet infant soul a new start, a clean diaper, a belly full of love, and a good rock in the cradle." I think you could make a good case for calling third density on planet Earth a reform school. Because no less than 16 civilizations that have failed their first try at third density and have destroyed their planet or their continent have come to the third density of planet Earth to try again. And we are trying. We really are. And I think under the radar of public opinion and the news and headlines, we are succeeding. The readings from Kuo have gotten more rosy through the years. Fourth density, the density of love and understanding, has to do with first the planet, then its people. And we talked about this last time. The fourth density of the planet is, as we have said, Ross said it January 29th, 1981, as regularized in its approach as the striking of a clock upon the hour. The space-time of your solar system has enabled this planetary sphere to spiral into space-time of a different vibrational configuration. All those quarks and things that people find and can't explain, these are fourth density elements of the way things are, the way space-time is in fourth density. Of course they can't explain them. They've never seen them before. They're new. But it's time for them. Okay, back to Ra. This causes the planetary sphere to be able to be molded by these new distortions. However, the thought forms of your people during this transition period are such that the mind-body-spirit complexes of both individual and societies are scattered throughout the spectrum instead of becoming able to grasp the needle, shall we say, and point the compass in one direction. Thus, the entry into the vibration of love, sometimes called by your people the vibration of understanding, is not effective with your present societal complex. Thus, the harvest shall be such that many will repeat the third density cycle. The energies of your wanderers, your teachers, and your adepts at this time are all bent on increasing the harvest. Now, as opposed to our planet, which moves as it must, because it is part of the astronomical thing that is, we have a good deal more leeway. If there had been a Cassian planetary pole shift in 1998 or whenever it would have occurred, we would all have gone at once. It has occurred before. It could occur again. I mean, I understand that the dinosaurs ended up being tar pits, right? So it's not that it couldn't happen, it's that it has not. And the explanation given by the Confederation is that the mismatch between where the planet needs to be vibrating and where it is vibrating is like a rubber band that's stretched taut. And as we have inconvenience after inconvenience, we're gently, slowly releasing and adjusting the planetary tectonic plates and so forth so that we do not have to have one global event. Certainly there's significant damage and loss of human life. That can't be argued. But the planet as a whole has not destroyed the populace. And we can give thanks for that to all of those groups, whatever their philosophy and whatever their motive, who have prayed for peace, have marched for peace, have found love in their hearts for people not their own. I remember a wonderful story about Gandhi. They asked a father who had lost his son and was bitterly full of hatred for the enemy, who I believe in this case was a Muslim Pakistani, went to Gandhi and said, "I cannot get it out of my head that this horrible thing happened to my son, and I hate all Muslims. What can I do to restore myself as I would wish to be, my guru?" And the guru said to him, "Please find a Muslim orphan and raise him as your own. Sometimes you simply have to force the coming together, the forgiveness and the love." Now, fourth density is described by Ra only referentially. That which fourth density is not, Ra says on January 31st, 81, it is not of words unless chosen. It is not of heavy chemical vehicles for body complex activity. It is not of disharmony within self. It is not of disharmony within peoples. It is not within limits of possibility to cause disharmony in any way. Approximation of positive statements. It is a plane of type of bipedal vehicle which is much denser and more full of life. It is a plane wherein one is aware of the thought of other selves. It is a plane where one is aware of vibrations of other selves. It is a plane of compassion and understanding of the sorrows of third density. It is a plane striving towards wisdom or light. It is a plane wherein individual differences are pronounced, although automatically harmonized by group consensus. Sounds like a good place to be. And I think many of us will see it soon. Fifth density is the density of wisdom. We think we know what wisdom is, and many of our world religions strive for wisdom. It is to be noted that there is only one world religion, I think, that honestly strives only for compassion, not for wisdom, and that's Christianity. Christianity, if you read the red print in the Bible, which comprise Jesus Christ's message, his words, as opposed to things that people said about him, is completely loving. He accepts everyone. Suffer the little children to come unto me, for such is the kingdom of heaven. He accepts Mary Magdalene, a prostitute, Matthew, a tax collector, and considered in that time the scum of the earth, because tax collectors collected first and then gave a certain amount of what they collected to the government. When he was on the cross, he was hung between two thieves, and one thief was jeering at him and jibing at him. Where are the angels to get you down from that cross? The other one said to him, look, you know, we deserve to be up here. We did steal. We did kill. This is a just punishment for crimes that we did commit. He said, he's done nothing. Then he turns to Jesus, or turns as much of his face as possible to Jesus. You're on a cross. You don't have a lot of mobility. And he says, will you remember me, Jesus? And Jesus says, this day you will be with me in paradise. Total forgiveness. And in a heartbeat, the man went from service to self to service to others and made the grade. That's what it takes. One heartfelt moment. We're all capable of that. We can all do that. But those who love wisdom come from the Buddhists. They come from Islam. They come from Judaism. I'd say Sufism and Baha'i are probably derivative of Islam. And the Kabbalah and the Essenes, both mystical Jewish sects, have given us a great deal of wisdom. And I'm grateful for the world religions. I'm grateful for the compassion and the love and the wisdom that they have been able to share. It doesn't work for everyone. Many of us need to create our own spiritual paths. But I believe it does still work for many, and it is to be praised that these paths are there for people to take. How do you graduate? Not as a Christian, not as a Jew, not as a Muslim, not as anything in particular, but as a woman or a man with love in your heart, in your eyes, in your soul. Sixth density is the density of unity. And I suppose the unity is between love and wisdom. You can have one or you can have the other, it seems to us many times. The choices of love are foolish compared to the choices of wisdom. But the job of the density of unity is to have compassionate wisdom and love that is informed by wisdom. Seventh density is the density of foreverness. And in that density, all of the souls thereon that have been on the king's highway for many, many densities finally release all thoughts of the past and turn their heads towards the completion of their journey. That density ends in timelessness, and then there is a pause while the great heart of the Creator beats one more time. And when it comes out of that beat, we are in another first density, starting the whole octave of densities once again, being sent out once again to gather information so the Creator can find out who He is. The octave density is called an octave density because of its likeness to music. When you've gone through seven notes, you go to the same note again, but an octave higher. Da 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 da. You hear how that's the same note? That's us. We're at da da da. We're at the third note. We have a few to go. We're on the King's Highway, but we're young, very young. I hope we make it into third grade by the winter solstice of 2012 so that we can graduate. I firmly intend to bend my every effort to being a person who can deal with fourth density light. Now, as I mentioned before, third density is the only density with a veil. And why is that? I'm going to read you this. Ross said, it seems that this choice for polarization at the end of third density, Don said this, is an important philosophical plan for the experience past third density. Am I correct in assuming that this process is a process to create the proper or desired experience that will take place in the creation after third density is complete? Ross says, these philosophical foundations are those of third density. Above this density, there remains a recognition of the architecture of the Logos, but without the veils which are so integral a part of the process of making the choice in third density. So the reason for the veil in this density is because we have to make a choice by faith alone. Whenever you get into spiritual material, you will find that it ends in paradox and mystery. It ends in things you can't explain. You can't prove anything spiritual. You cannot prove QED, that there is love. You can only look into your life and see how love moves us around to know how powerful love is. I think that's been one of the great faults of philosophy as a whole, that it does not have the ability to recognize the preeminence of love. Certainly philosophers have tried, but I don't believe anybody has made a good case. And so what happens to philosophy is that it rambles around getting lost in technicalities and semantics, and it doesn't grip anyone anymore. Actually, I have always found philosophy enormously gripping. I took every course that was offered both in the undergraduate and postgraduate classes when I went to University of Louisville. And I absolutely adored certain philosophers. But I always had that criticism of the entire study, is that there was not the capacity of that, or for that matter, psychology. Neither discipline was able to work in the imponderable but eminent importance of love. So what we have here in third density is a veil which makes it impossible for us to prove anything. We have instead to leap into the midair of faith. How do you gain faith? Well, you take the jump. It's kind of scary. You take that jump and you say, I believe. What do you believe in? Well, it's not that you, there's no content to faith. You just know that all is well. And that all is working itself out in a benign fashion that's going to help you out. And there's no proof of that. So you must have faith. The Creator has certain characteristics that are innate. It's in our spiritual DNA that we are creatures of love, because love is all there is. The one great original thought was a thought of love. And when light came into being and manifestation took place, it linked love, that thought, into everything it manifested. So the most distorted things that you see are still love. They're just greatly distorted. But the heart of everything is love. Jesus said it well when he said, I am the vine and you are the branches. No matter how much we get off the beam, if you go back to our rootstock, it's love. And we can always get back there. And we need to get back there. Unity is the only principle not a distortion of the law of one. So imagine, distortion is not a bad word. If nothing but unity itself is actually real, and of course you can't see unity, it hasn't been moved on yet by free will to develop any focus or to manifest anything, then everything's a distortion. So distortions are good. One thing about the raw material is that it uses that word over and over again, and people tend to think that distortion's a bad thing. Well, it's good to lessen distortion, but to think that we could ever completely overcome it is to somehow think that we could, in the body, be all that there is. We can't. We're separate. We're sitting on chairs. And we see each other through eyes that observe the boundaries between us all. We're distorted beings. But we're distorted in good ways as well as bad. And our hope simply is to come into balance and lessen distortion. Kuo said in 2007, December 29th, one does not have to try to be a part of the Creator. You are the Creator. You are a holographic spark of the Creator, as is every other portion of this interactive and very much alive creation. But you are a holographic sample or bit of the whole. I love that. Sample. You know, we're used to the sampling that is done by DJs. It sounds very sharp, and it's come out in music a lot, especially hip-hop. But here we are, samples in the recordings of the Creator. You contain in every cell of your body that one great original thought that holds all things together. You do not have to strive or stretch. You have only to allow yourself to be. That is your nature. Free will is the first distortion of the law of one. It is uppermost in the minds of those who wish to serve others. Don asks, basically, I would say that to infringe upon the free will of another entity would be the basic thing never to do under the law of one. Can you state any other breaking of the law of one than this basic rule? Now listen to what Ross says here. As one proceeds from the primal distortion of free will, one proceeds to the understanding of the focal points of intelligent energy, which have created the intelligences or the ways of a particular mind-body-spirit complex, that's us, in its environment, both what you would call natural and what you would call man-made. Thus, the distortions to be avoided are those which do not take into consideration the distortions of the focus of energy of love-light, or shall we say the logos of this particular sphere or density. These include the lack of understanding of the needs of the natural environment, the needs of other selves, mind-body-spirit complexes. These are many due to the various distortions of man-made complexes. Thus, what would be an improper distortion with one entity is proper with another. So it's all relative, as it used to be so cool to say back in the 60s, everything is relative. Well, it is. Because if we want to walk a couple of miles in the other person's shoes, we have to focus on that one individual and come to understand what moves him. And only then can we be pretty sure that we know what would support and help him and what would tear him down. I have many times, because I am a problem solver by nature, heard a friend's venting to me, telling me how bad everything is, and I'm starting to solve the problem. Well, what if you did this? Well, how about if you thought that? And it's like, no, I just want to complain. I don't want to change. So, sometimes a good friend has to let you continue in your distortion if you want to be a real support. You just need to listen. Love is the second distortion of the law of one. Now, I realize that love is a pitiful word. As our vice president of the board's father would say, plum pitiful. Because we use love. I love carrots. I love James Taylor songs. I love going to eat at the Sea Hag, which is where we will be eating before we leave. Well, I believe that's right. Tomorrow night. Yeah, not tonight. Tonight we go up to Avalon, except for me. I don't go. I would probably break an ankle up there. That would not be a good thing. It's not what I call tame. But Melissa has made it look its best. By the way, she says to tell you she either could clean here at Camelot campus or she could clean Avalon campus. And we all decided that we needed it here at Camelot better. More. So you must forgive her if you see dust. And she described it as if it were piles of it everywhere. And I imagine that it'll look absolutely impeccable. But she needs you to know that she did not have the time to spring clean Avalon. But I know you'll enjoy it there. It's a wonderful place with a wonderful spirit. Love permeates the Creator. Therefore, we are sons and daughters of love, naturally permeated by love. Hatton says, we are not attempting to change the thinking of our Creator. We are only attempting to bring His ideas to some of the more isolated parts for their inspection and appraisal. Isolated parts, I say, my friends, and why should we consider these parts to be isolated? We consider them isolated because, from our point of view, they have chosen to wander far from the concept that we have found to permeate most of the parts of the creation of which we are familiar. The concept from which we have wandered is love. He goes on to say, we find, my friends, that man upon planet Earth has, in his experiences and experiments, has become isolated in his thinking and has divorced it from that to which we are accustomed in the vast reaches of creation which we have experienced. I urge you, my friends, to remember what we have brought to you. The next time that you are backed into a corner by circumstances which prevail within the illusion of your physical existence, remember what you have learned and do not forget what you have worked so hard to obtain. And finally, I want to share with you the fourth concept, light. Finally, light brings us into manifestation. We pop into being. We appear to have mass. We appear to have color and drama. And we can tell our stories. And that's just what we should be doing. Telling our stories to each other, encouraging each other, and bringing each other home. January 30, 1981, Ross says, in yesterday's material, you mentioned that the first distortion was the distortion of free will. Is there a sequence of first, second, and third distortion of the law of one? Ross says, only up to a very short point. After this point, the manyness of distortions are equal one to another. The first distortion, free will, finds focus. This is the second distortion, known to you as logos, the creative principle or love. This intelligent energy thus creates a distortion known as light. By its use in combining with the logos or love, the entire infinite creation was made and continues to develop by the use of the free will choices of all of us. One last quote. Don asks on May 29, 1981, can a mind-body-spirit complex then have any body activated that is one of the seven rays? Is this correct? And Ross says this is correct in the same sense as it is correct to state that anyone may play a complex instrument which develops an euphonious harmonic vibration complex, such as your piano, and can play this so well that it might offer concerts to the public, as you would say. In other words, although it is true that each true color vehicle is available potentially, there is skill and discipline needed in order to avail the self of the more advanced or lighter vehicles. I think a lot of people really would like to spend their time in the upper true color chakras, and even perhaps to slip off into the densities that are the same colors as those chakras. Because the seven densities have the same coloration as the chakras within our body. So the chakra beyond the yellow ray chakra, which is our third density chakra, is the green ray. So we really like the thought of living in the green ray body, or maybe the blue ray body, or maybe even the indigo ray body. Oh boy, I want to be there. It doesn't work that way. We're going to be harvestable when we're in balance with ourselves, when we have found ways to love ourselves. I find it interesting. I think it was Eccles that asked for a discussion of the chakra system of seven rays as opposed to that of 12 rays. I could be wrong here, Eccles, but it just seems that might be true. And at any rate, it was a fascinating dissertation by those of Kuo. And they said, among other things, that there is a chakra in between the yellow ray chakra and the green ray chakra. And I have called it in 101 the courtyard of the open heart. Because we get to the courtyard of our open heart and we stand before the steps of the temple. Now, in the book, I likened it to standing in the plaza at San Marco in Venice. It used to be the chapel of the Doges, so-called. It's a huge, immense edifice with a bell tower. And in front of it is this absolutely vast plaza, an open space where lots of tourists are coming and going, and pigeons are there. And I've always thought, you know, my distortions are as many as the pigeons. So it's like the task of collecting all the pigeons around the courtyard of San Marco for us to try to collect all of our wayward self. But that's what we have to do. Whenever we get to that point where we've done the balancing exercises and we see we're caught up again in whatever distortion it is, we have to take that distortion and bring it to our hearts and say, yes, you are part of me. Yes, I love you. I accept you. I will work with you. And I ask you to serve the light within me rather than the darkness. And I think it's very possible to do that. I certainly have had a lot of luck asking some of the uglier parts of me to turn their attention to making me have more grit, more muscle, more perseverance, and be a more sturdy and trustworthy servant of the light. Because it's those ugly emotions, those dark emotions, that actually have a lot of our strength. Do you remember by any chance the episode of the original Star Trek where Captain Kirk went through the transporter and was changed into his weak side and his strong side, or his good side and his bad side? And he could no longer make decisions. Only the rapist, the soldier, the brutal Kirk could actually make decisions. And the hardest thing Kirk had to decide was to go ahead and reunite with the ugly side of himself so that when he went back through the transporter and then came out again, the Scotty's clever maneuvers had been able to combine those two into one so that he could function in this world. We need our dark side. We need to love our dark side. We certainly don't need to exercise it. But we need to appreciate it, to accept it, and to ask it to work for us instead of against us. And I think we can do that. We can learn to play this piano. Not just chopsticks. We can be good. We can be really good. Okay. I look forward to tomorrow morning for those of us at Homecoming 2010 at LNL Research. And for those of you on BBS Radio, whenever Don Newsom decides to schedule the third talk. It's been a pleasure to talk with you. And I will enjoy sharing with you on polarity next time. I am the circle and you are healing me. I am the circle and you are healing me. United people, we are one. United people, we are one. I am the circle and you are healing me. I am the circle and you are healing me. United people, we are one. United people, we are one. I am the circle and you are healing me. I am the circle and you are healing me. United people, we are one. United people, we are one.